can everyone hear me? Everyone hear me back there? Okay, good. First, I want to thank everyone for showing up this late on a Saturday afternoon. I really appreciate your interest in coming out here. I'm here to basically shake things up considerably. We've had a consensus view about who the best baseball players of all time are based on their batting prowess and their fielding prowess combined. And I'm here to say that we've been, including myself, we've been underestimating the impact of fielding throughout history, and that the really good fielders have been undervalued as overall players, and the really bad fielders have been overvalued as overall players. So there are four big themes I want everyone to be able to take away from this presentation when they leave today. The first is that the net runs saved by fielders, what I call fielding runs for this presentation, can be estimated throughout history. This was considered the holy grail problem and no one could do this, but I think it's fair to say that it can be done reasonably well. The second big idea is that even though you can estimate fielding value, you have to accept the fact that from year to year there's some noise in the system. You're going to see some surprising amount of variability in estimates of fielding value from year to year. But this is the other important idea. This has also been true of batting runs, estimates of how many runs batters create compared to the average batter. And people have just simply glossed over this throughout history, but it's been lurking there in the background. Just by a show of hands here, how many people here have heard of batting linear weights by Pete Palmer? Okay, good. I'm in the right place, okay? Okay. Because of this, both hard copy and online encyclopedias have been distorting and underestimating the value of fielding runs. And the underestimating of value could be by about as much as half. Maybe it's more like a third, maybe it's a half, somewhere in that area. And consequently, the final takeaway is that the rankings of all-time greats and near-great players, both batting and fielding combined, need to change. They need to change considerably. Okay. How many people have seen this picture? Good. Okay, we all know this is the most direct way to estimate fielding value. It's based on something called batted ball data, and that's where you basically count all the balls that land in each area of the field and compare a fielder's success rate against the rate of all the other fielders of that season or maybe another larger sample size. And it's very straightforward. There's a famous analyst called Tom Tango who has his own blog, and he says that estimating fielding runs with batted ball data, assuming the data is right, is pretty simple. If you put all of us in a room, in a matter of days, we all have come out with practically the same system. It's very straightforward. But there's limitations here, okay? First of all, there is no such thing as batted ball data before 1989. That chart I showed up there is retrosheet batted ball data from 1989 through 1999. And also, the data is proprietary since 2000. So there's no open source data available to fans. Third major point, which I think I was the first person to highlight, is that the data is inconsistent. Back around 2007, when BIS came out with their own data set, I compared published ratings based on the proprietary data of BIS ratings versus ratings that were based on stats data, and I found that particularly in the outfield, there was a very low correlation. There's a very surprising degree of inconsistency. You would think that the whole point of batted ball data is that you can just simply finally get an exact answer. That turns out not to be the case. And what's perhaps even more disturbing is that the data appears to be rather biased, meaning that it would be one thing if people were estimating where the ball landed in the field and you had multiple suppliers of data and the noise kind of all averaged out and you got to a good answer. But instead what we're finding is that people who have to code where the ball lands tend to anchor their estimates based upon where the player plays his position. And the net effect of this is that it has tended to cause bad fielders to be overrated and good fielders to be underrated. One simple way of seeing this is that if a great fielder actually catches the ball, the people who are coding where the ball was will tend to estimate that the ball was caught closer to the player's original position. Whereas if a fielder misses the ball, doesn't reach the ball, the coder is more inclined to think that the ball was farther away from the player's initial position. So this tends to cause some bias. And now, to be fair, I raised this issue, and there was actually objective data showing this with completely unambiguously. And since then, BIS has said that they have addressed this problem. I've talked to some other people who suggested that maybe that's not the case. But in any event, the batted ball data, such as we can tell, seems to compress ratings. The best brought down, the worst pulled up. Okay. Here's my little pitch here. My system is called defensive regression analysis. I call it DRA. And it's the first and only fielding run system that is objective. In other words, not based on sort of arbitrary or personal formulas. Open source, meaning that both the data and the methods and the bottom line equations that result from the system are fully disclosed in my book, which is here. And applicable, meaning it can be applied throughout Major League history. In other words, given whatever data is available out in the public, the system can be adapted to generate ratings for fielders throughout history. Furthermore, as far as I can tell, and I've done some more research since my book came out, the DRA is the best fielding run system in terms of minimizing bias, in other words, getting the overall direction, the relative value of players correct, and also estimating the overall net impact of fielding, in other words, how big an impact does fielding have, positive or negative. Excuse me. And DRA is again, the system used in wizardry, which the Wall Street Journal was kind enough to review last year as the definitive work on fielding and the book of the season. So I was very kind of them to say that. And I hope that some of you will get a chance to look at this book. You can get it on ebooks for like $9 on Amazon, or it's like $12. It's a paperback. Okay. Just a little bit about DRA. I promised everyone here no equations, because if I showed equations, I'd lose you all. But basically, the idea is, look, there's only certain types of data that are important. Other types of statistics tend to be duplicative. So you sort of filter out a lot of the stuff that's not meaningful. Secondly, you try to measure the statistically significant relationships between different pieces of public data. So for example, using regression analysis, you can say something like, well, for every marginal 100 flyouts allowed by the team's pitchers, we should expect shortstop assists to go down by 20. I mean, that's just a made-up number, but just to give you some idea of how we're trying to find the statistical relationships between all the different types of data. Make each variable, meaning each outcome, each pitcher outcome, each fielder outcome, as statistically independent of each other as possible, so that when you do a final regression analysis, you get to see the net average impact in runs of each defensive event. So using the DRA formulas, you get the same average value for a pitcher strikeout, or when a pitcher allows a home run, or when a fielder makes a play. By and large, we'll qualify that in a bit. And then fielding runs are simply the number of net plays, in other words, the plays below expectation, times the ascribed value in runs. So that's probably about as technical as I'm going to get right now. Okay. Now, post-wizardry DRA update. In my book, I was very careful to point out instances in which DRA could be more biased or not as accurate as some of the other systems out there. In particular, the system that is predominantly used on the most, I guess it's the best known, currently best known, online baseball encyclopedias, which are baseballreference.com and Fangraphs. And that system is called Total Zone by Sean Smith. Now, Sean is a great analyst, and he really has advanced the ball in terms of player valuation as much as anyone. But the system that he used is called Total Zone. Turns out, after I wrote the book, I did some more research, and it turns out that the DRA way of estimating the relative number of ground ball opportunities for infielders and fly ball opportunities for outfielders is much better at predicting actual ground balls and fly balls for periods before we have that actual data. Total Zone tends to misallocate, plays, in terms of left field versus right field. Also, Total Zone overweights errors by about half a run. This has a huge impact in that a lot of fielders who are conventionally perceived as good because they have low error rates get way overrated under the system. The fact of the matter is that a player who makes an error doesn't harm his team any more than a player who just didn't get to the ball in the first place at a first approximation. There's a little bit of noise in there, but by and large, that's the case. And also, I pointed this out in the book, and I've since confirmed this, is that The way that the total zone system works, as far as I can tell from its disclosed format since 1950, it tends to sort of bleed the team rating into the individual player rating. So a player who plays for a team that's a good fielding team will tend to be more overrated than under the DRA system. I admit that we've got that problem to some extent, but it's significantly less. Okay. So what DRA does is we try to systematically figure out the factors that tend to overstate or understate fielding opportunities to sort of prevent fielders from being overrated or underrated. But again, it's important to recognize that even if you get rid of all the systematic biases, with the tendency of the team's pitchers to give up more ground balls or fly balls or what have you, there's still going to be an inevitable amount of random noise. And this amount can be about roughly 12 runs a season. So in other words, as far as I can tell, and this is just based on some basic binomial variance or something, but if you had a system that basically took out all the systematic factors that tended to distort fielding opportunities and just left the random noise, you could expect fielding ratings to bob up and down 12 or so runs a season or more. Okay. Now, but batting runs are noisy too. We have here Dick Kramer here who helped establish this. And the bottom line is that when a batter is not walking, striking out, or hitting a home run, in other words, when he hits the ball into the field of play, there's roughly as much random variation in his run production as a hitter when a ball is put into the field of play as there is when he's fielding a ball hit in the field of play. So in other words, all those batting runs ratings people have been looking at for many years have lurking within them this kind of random variation. So, but now when people started producing fielding runs estimates, they saw the random variation. They weren't used to seeing it. They did different things to sort of compress it. Okay. So to test what the true answer would be, I thought, well, let's try to measure a fielder's effectiveness over the course of his entire career so the more the noise would randomize out rather than just season by season. And this is based on a system many people have had, including Tom Ruane, I think, and Bill James, and also Tom Tango, and myself, actually, as well. And basically, you're basically using a database. You can say, how many plays did this fielder make playing behind this pitcher, and then compare his rate with all the other fielders at that position who played behind the same pitcher. And then you go through all the pitchers the guy played for, and you can compare the net effect. And here's the bottom line punch. I put together a sample of all 46 fielders that I could find that had 100 or more positive or negative runs under DRA, and these sample players had an average of 10 seasons worth of fielding. Right. Whoops, I'm sorry. Whoops. Oh, sugar. How do I get this to go? How do I make it go to the hole? Oh, this one? How do I?
Slideshow.
Wait, on the top? Oh, there we go. And then we went.
From the current slide. Current's on the left, from the current slide.
Oh, current. Okay. Okay, here we go. Now we get to the results. Okay. So for this sample of players, what we found is that the average career runs, either negative or positive, were huge under this system. They were roughly 225 runs. DRA, the old DRA in the book, was about 133, and total zone, which is used in baseball reference and so forth, was around 96. Translated per 162 games, you can see here this impact. This 25-run impact was also independently verified by Tom Tango using an entirely different methodology to estimate the impact of top fielders. So fielders have a big impact that we've been underestimating. And so now we get to the bottom line, the real payoff here, which is basically saying, well, how does this impact who are the best players of all time, who should be in the Hall of Fame? This is the fun part. I don't think anyone has ever considered Speaker a better player than Cobb. And I'm here to tell you that based on the best estimate I can develop right now, he was probably about as good. Is this cutting off here on the right side? Can you see that? Can you see it? They're basically, what I did is I took the existing wins above replacement, I subtracted out the total sum. Now, this is denominated in wins rather than runs, so just think of that 9 as a 90 runs. And think of wizardry there, that's from the book, that's the number, think of 4 runs or 24 runs or 10 runs, I'm sorry, 40 runs or 240 runs or 100 runs. And then the new DRA, which I've been sort of developing to sort of take into account this greater variance, and then you sort of basically subtract out the total zone, add in the new DRA, and you get a new WAR number. And you can see there that under this system, Tris Speaker comes in roughly the same value as Cobb. And there's Wagner as well. I mean, I think he was pretty close. So I personally now think that the greatest non-pitcher of the dead ball era was actually Tris Speaker, not Ty Cobb. And I think this is something,
what is pretty cutoff number there for you?
Oh, sorry, what?
What is the cutoff WAR on each of those? We can't read them.
Oh, it is cut off. I'm sorry. It was 150 for Cobb, 151 for Speaker, and 131 for Wagner. Now, of course, 151 versus 150 is meaningless. But my point of view is that if they're roughly approximately the same value in terms of just the hard numbers, and Speaker was sort of easy to be with, and Cobb was not, if I were the general manager of the team, I'd rather have Tris Speaker on my team than Ty Cobb. Also, Bill James did a study for his 85 abstract in which he showed that Tris Speaker's teams, when he was playing, had a much higher win rating, or percentage of wins, than when he was not playing. And so, anyway, for what that's worth. And first, the greatest player of the modern era, from 69 to 92, you can see here the WAR numbers, they're pretty clumped together, Morgan, Schmidt, and Ricky Henderson. Under the new WAR number, and again, I guess it's cut off there on the side, but it's basically 128 WAR for Henderson, 122 for Schmidt, and 87 for Morgan. Now, to be fair, I think Schmidt's still the better player because he had many more dominant seasons, and a lot of the WAR numbers for Henderson just were playing out the string for a long time. So, and as far as the greatest first baseman of all time, I think Pujols now has done such a bang-up job of fielding that his total WAR numbers is very close to Gary's, and I think for all intents and purposes, he's now the greatest first baseman of all time. And I've got two more fun things here. Okay. Best all-around shortstops, taking into account both fielding and hitting. This is, again, the WAR number from Baseball Reference. There's the total zone number, the wizardry version of DRA, the new version of DRA, the new WAR number. What you see here is that Derek Jeter, who's around up here, I think belongs more like down there. Now, that's still a Hall of Fame number.
3 minutes left. Okay, good.
That's still a Hall of Fame number. Basically, if you take the top 160 WAR numbers off of Baseball Reference, the lowest number is around 50 WAR, and that's the same number, 160 is the same number of players who are in the Hall of Fame who are non-pitchers. So, I mean, he's still a Hall of Fame player, but he's a lot closer to Burt Campanaris than I think the average fan would possibly imagine. Cal Ripken is also hugely overrated under total zone, because it overweights avoiding errors, and also because some of the batted ball data from 89 to 99, is very biased in Ripken's favor. Ripken was above average fielder, but I think Barry Larkin has actually been the greatest shortstop of our time. Well, Alex Rodriguez, half shortstop, half third baseman. And then, okay, now, final, and I think this is the final takeaway here, is we've got some interesting Hall of Fame cases coming up. Keith Hernandez, for example, is now first qualifying for the first time under the Veterans Committee, and I think he has a very strong case. I mean, I think his fielding prowess is just so strong that he really, deserves consideration. Also, Buddy Bell, I think, is another guy who, you can see here, it says here 31 for New DRA. It suggests 310 fielding runs. That's a conservative number. That's a very conservative number for Buddy Bell. Craig Biggio, he'll get in because he's got 3,000 hits. But as far as I'm concerned, he's a pretty borderline candidate. He's probably okay, but he's not a really great one. Tony Oliva here is someone I think deserves a lot more consideration. His career got cut off when he was 32 because of some injuries, but he put in a lot of, I think he had basically 4 seasons, fielding and hitting combined, of approximately MVP level quality, plus some all-star seasons as well. So also Omar Vizquel. This is another sort of controversial finding here. I keep running the numbers a bit, but I keep coming back to the fact that he was maybe slightly above average at most over the course of his career. He did have a few seasons where he probably deserved a Gold Glove, but he had a lot of other seasons where he was, frankly, not even average. I think one very quick and dirty way of seeing how he was less than dominant is to acknowledge the fact that he had never led the league in assisted shortstop in his entire career. Now, it just seems very intuitive to me that if you were thinking of a great slugger, how could you call someone a truly great slugger if he never led the league in home runs even once, or never led the league in RBIs at least once, or never led the league in slugging percentage at least once? Omar Vizquel was just a very sure-handed guy who just didn't get a lot of balls. So I think that's basically it. And here's my book. It's again, it got nice reviews, but sales have been slight because I actually bothered to show the math. And I welcome any questions you might have. Both the total zone ratings and also the DR ratings had a pretty good correlation with the what I call the with or without you ratings. The DRA was somewhat higher, but there was no like shocks. There was some surprisingly. I mean, Mike Schmidt was like, it's scary. I mean, he just seemed to make so many more plays. No matter how you adjust for it, he made a ton of plays.
Seeing Joe Tinker at plus 38 or whatever, are you adjusting, or is each era adjusted?
No, this is a very good question. That is not adjusted. In my book, I develop a unique way of timelining for players, and under that timeline adjustment, I have Tinker still one of the top 10 shortstops of all time, but I think it's a very well, very good point. It's kind of naive to think that he was the greatest of all time.
On your slide,
you know what? The numbers were so screwed up that for some reason, when I did the calculation and used the database, I know I did something wrong because I have Steve Sachs being a great fielder and Joe Morgan being a great fielder and Lou Whitaker being a mediocre fielder. It just, there's something I screwed up. I mean. I didn't do that analysis for him because the retro sheet data, through no fault of anyone here, it's just that there was a lot of missing score sheets, particularly for the Pittsburgh Pirates, and so I just didn't bother because I figured there'd be a lot of, you know, just missing data.
Oh. Yeah, if you sort of imagine a world sometime in the future in which you actually have access to fielders' positions, trajectories of balls, how would this affect the kind of analysis that you're doing?
Well, then I think the trick will be, like, that's a very good question. In other words, once batted ball data is rendered more or less perfect, and actually it would not be that difficult to do it. I've talked about this at length with other people. Then what you want to do is you want to reverse engineer using the non-batted ball data what best predicts the batted ball data. I mean, one of the ways I validated my ground ball estimator for seasons in which we don't have total counts of ground balls and fly balls is by using my model against actual data when we have the data, and then seeing whether that fits better than the other predictor used in total zone. And it turned out that the total zone predictor predicted maybe only 55% of the variance in ground ball versus fly ball rates, whereas the DRA method mentioned in the book predicts more like 80 or 85%.
So in terms of what you just said,
yes,
you're talking about speaker and cob.
Yes.
Is that the way you had to do it?
Yes, I had to do it indirectly. Yes, exactly.
What were some of the surprises you found either way?
Trying to think of someone who's... Well, gosh, that's a good question. I think I recognized in the book that like my rating for Aparicio was too low, and I have to do some more numbers to see it, to get that corrected. Maybe someone can help me out on this, actually. When I did my with or without you analysis, one of the center fielders I put in there was Chet Lemon, and he showed up as extremely high. I mean, I wonder if I made a mistake there. I would encourage anyone to, if they know the technique I'm talking about, and they have a retro sheet database, it'd be kind of fun to swap information here about how extremely good he seemed to have been at catching fly balls. Okay.
the recent pension for managers to position players out of position with shifts and massive change in strategy in the last couple of seasons. How will that impact the team?
It could considerably, although as part of this analysis to sort of develop the next generation of DRA, I tried to track the out distribution faced by each fielding team based upon the its opponent's record of out distributions as batters, controlling for the existing ground ball or fly ball information and also the pitcher handedness. Bottom line was is that at least through 2009, on average between 1989 and 2009, there was actually very little variation in the ground and in the out distribution rates in the field based just on the batters after you already controlled for whether the ball was hit in the ground or in the air and whether it was hit by a left-handed hitter or a right-handed hitter. Okay, I'll give Sean here a chance because I'm...
So just to clarify what Joe said, if you were to add up all the 1906 fielders, they mm-hmm. would not average zero, they would not come up to zero.
No, under my listing they do.
On the numbers that were posted up here?
No, I didn't show any. Tell me.
Well, I'm talking about Tinker. If you took Tinker and everybody else in 1906,
yes.
You add up all the shortstops,
yes.
Fielding runs,
yes.
They come out to
yes.
Okay, can we give him a round of applause?